Malcolm. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year, yeah.
I can't even believe it. See, I'm old, so 2025 is like blowing my doors off. But
right.
I'm really excited about this year. Let's congratulate you. I don't know if the listener can tell, but you have some pretty shiny new equipment.
It's very shiny and colorful and exciting.
And sounds great. I don't know if they're going to know the difference, but I sure as heck know you
do. I'm sure they will.
And it'll make life a little bit easier for you.
Yeah.
So we're real excited. You always start the new year. You know, you think of your holidays. You know, there was a day that as an organization, we used to be given the day off.
Right.
And really, MLK Day has become a movement, MLK Day of Service. Mm-hmm. So now Feeding Tampa Bay, they're putting us back to work. And it's so funny, our leadership thought that they might get a little pushback from us because, you know, those days off are precious. Uh-huh. And nobody did. Mm-hmm. It's what we do, yeah. Right? We have 4,500 people in here every month. Yeah. So it was like, all right, let's go. Right. So with that being said, mm-hmm. When we were thinking about who we might want to bring in to just promote that day, but also talk about the importance of MLK Day and respecting all of our neighbors that interact with our life, I have a very good friend that I met through ABC Action News. We're on a committee together. And that is Dr. Wright. Dr. Wright, I'm so excited to have you here. You are iconic in Tampa Bay, actually the state, if truth be told.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'm trying to make a difference. That's for sure. That's
you do. Counts. You do, and you've made quite a bit.
I like your saying when I enter your building, it says one drop of water is one drop, but when you put it all together, it's an ocean.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And that's what we have to do, is continue to join others to make a difference, and that's what I've been trying to get done.
Yeah. And you've been doing it for a little while.
Yes. You know, I founded the Tampa Bay Black Heritage Festival here in this community back in 1999. That's the same year I finished my doctoral studies at the University of South Florida.
Okay.
And this year we will celebrate 25 years of the Tampa Bay Black Heritage Festival. In fact, the kickoff is is coming up soon on the 10th of January. But unfortunately, I'll be out of town. But I'll see them when I get back to Tampa.
Yeah, they'll report back to you.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, I don't know if it's as rare anymore as it used to be, mm-hmm. but it back when we were original Floridians, there weren't many. It was more of a transient state, right? Mm-hmm. How many Floridians, like back when I was growing up, or you went to high school or any kind of school, and you said, where are you from originally? You said Florida. They were like stunned, like really? But you're original Floridian as well.
I am a native Floridian. Yeah. I was born in Boynton Beach.
Nice.
Back in 1953, and both of my parents were born in Boynton Beach.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. And so we've been in that community for a number of years.
Yeah.
So that's been a blessing.
Yeah.
So I do know you were an only child, right?
No, only son.
Only son. You have sisters.
Only son. I have three sisters.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Only son of my mother and father.
Okay, yeah. Wonderful. So, you know, a lot of times on the podcast, we talk about the influences we've had in our lives that have moved us in the direction where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into your past and your passion for education. But who influenced that in you to take the initial direction that you did, that education was so important to you?
Well, you know, my mother was quite adamant about the fact that we would accomplish some things in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And though she had meager beginnings, she didn't get to college. My father didn't finish high school. But she knew what she wanted for her children.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had the village. I had many aunts and uncles who were college educated. They mm-hmm. were FAMU rattlers or had gone to Bethune-Cookman College, and they all talked about the college experience. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like a given that you would try to, when you finished high school, that you would go to college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I decided I wanted to use my pen in my head and not my physical labor.
Yeah.
That's what my dad did pretty much. And I said, that's not for me. I wanted to do something totally different.
Well, and you're a very bright young man at
the
time.
Well, I did well in school.
Yes.
And what was so nice about that, when in primary school, I had teachers who knew my parents pretty well. But they would always say to my mom and dad, hold your dollars because your son is gonna eventually go to college and do something good.
Yeah.
So they prepared them for that, you know, because of my experiences in elementary school, you know. I had leading parts in plays. Nice. Coming up as a kid.
Okay.
I always had the kind of the main actor.
Mm. Yeah.
In most of the plays.
Yeah. Always so, the leading man.
And so they always said to my parents, kind of hold your dollars because that fella's going to go to school. You're going to need to have to take care of him in terms of his college education.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And what about your sisters? Did they go on to college too?
Yeah, I have sisters, two sisters who finished college. One finished a master's. And my older sister, she started in community college. She didn't finish. She took a different route.
Mm-hmm.
But the others did. They taught school for a number of years. And the one sister retired from Palm Beach County school system, you know, as an educator. So many of them. We had aunts who were teachers. A lot of them were. So my sisters followed in their footsteps.
Yeah. So for your core family, you guys were that generational change that your parents supported and really dreamt and pushed for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had a interesting situation when I finished high school. My mother prepared me and took me and bought me some luggage. Bought me some designer luggage, and she said, I don't know where, you know, she said, before that time, she said, wherever you choose to go to school, I'm going to support you wherever you choose to go.
Aww.
So I told her I wanted to go to the University of Florida. I had an uncle in Gainesville who was NAACP president and real active minister in the Gainesville area. So I chose to go to the University of Florida and had a wonderful experience at UF.
Yeah.
Nice.
Give us a few key wonderful experiences for you at that time.
Well, I was I participated in the marching band my freshman year. I served in the men's glee club and the chorale, and I traveled with a college choir on spring break while I was there. I was able to pledge my fraternity. I was a Chatterline member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity 52 years ago. I was a freshman, and we were the very first black fraternity at the University of Florida, and that was a real exciting time for us at UF. And then
we
just created a lot of excitement for the university. And then from that point, other black fraternities, sororities came aboard at the University of Florida. But it was a great, great time. And 2 years ago, we had our 50th reunion.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say how many wonderful friends. Well, I mean, how iconic is that? I'm going to use this word a lot because I always think of you and I think that. Uh-huh. But how incredible is that the first black fraternity, you started it for everybody, right? Are you guys all still friends? It's like still a brotherhood?
Yeah,
you help kids coming up, of that?
Yeah, we really are. We stay in touch. And it was real exciting when we all got back. There were 21 of us initially on, 23 of us when we started the fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, at that time, we had two deaths when we had the reunion 2 years ago.
Okay.
Since that time, we've lost another fraternity brother or two. But the exciting thing was we all bought shirts and caps alike, so we all took pictures. And
I love that. I want to see those.
Had a wonderful time there for the 50th reunion. It turned out nice. And we had the president to come speak and had a really lavish formal gala, which was really nice. So it was a really, really nice. In fact, this is a memoir. Ring is one was designed just for my chapter.
Wow. Okay.
This was designed just for the 50th celebration.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So all of the brothers who were able to afford the the registration was able to get this. In fact, we had a ring ceremony during the gala that we had at the University of Florida. That was exciting.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So you started the University of Florida. So far, there's a lot of educational support, NAACP activism.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you're youth, you're introduced into that. Leadership starts for you when?
Well, when I was in high school, I was I integrated a middle school, junior high school at seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I was pretty involved with the band, and then when I got to high school, I was pretty involved in a number of activities. I was in the marching band and high school, Atlantic High School band, mm-hmm. and then when while I was there, I was involved in student government and in high school, I was elected prom king.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
During my senior year.
Look at you. Like, he's out front the whole time.
So that was exciting.
What an honor.
It was an honor. And yeah. So I had a great time. And I was selected to speak at graduation, which was a real honor. You know, we used as a theme during those days, we've only just begun.
Yep. Mm.
So we didn't have to really write a lot of our presentation. We had faculty members who assisted us with that.
Yeah.
But they selected us to deliver the message. So I was one of the speakers at graduation, which was real exciting.
Oh,
nice. And during that time, we never did have any ministers of color to participate in commencement and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I, as a student leader, recommended that we diversify the graduation and commencement and get ministers of color to participate in that ceremony. So mm-hmm. that did materialize. So that worked out really well.
In high school.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when I went to the University of Florida, I participated in student government there. Mm-hmm. And I worked at the Institute of Black Culture
mm-hmm.
at the University of Florida. For 3 years while I was there, that was my little job mm-hmm. on campus, and I got a chance to meet phenomenal people like Jesse Jackson and have dinner with them, and just a number of people that came through the University of Florida to speak to students. So we had some real great experiences, you know.
That's cool.
How?
Yeah, I haven't heard of a role like that. So what is that? You said Minister of Black Culture. How, what was the title?
The Institute of Black Culture.
Institute of Black Culture. Interesting.
At the University of Florida.
Gotcha.
It was a program that was started, I think they got started with that one shortly right before I attended the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
There was a walkout, you know, in April, I think it was, 1971, before I got to Florida. I got to Florida in June of 71. But there were some issues with black student leaders with the president at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I think as a way of doing some things that black students wanted, they had decided to start the Institute on Black Culture at the University of Florida.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
It's still around. It's been around for a number of years.
Wow. No less necessary.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Certainly it's necessary for folks to know and understand. So University of Florida, you graduate. Now, you have your own family.
Oh, yeah. I have a son and daughter.
And a wife.
Divorced now.
Okay.
But my ex-wife still lives here, and my son and daughter live here. My daughter is a graduate of the University of Central Florida.
Okay.
And St. Leo College was an MBA, and she's with BayCare. My son is with UPS.
Okay.
He's a driver, and he decided he didn't want to go to college and he didn't want to waste our funds.
Mm.
So he said he wanted to work. So that's what he's doing, but he's doing extremely well, and he lives in the Plant City area.
Yeah. You know, we have to give our children that decision, right?
That's
true. You got to respect them a little bit by saying, I want to go to work and I don't want to waste your dollars. I actually have, of my three sons, I have one who tried, and he was like, Mom, this just isn't for me. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, what can we do to move forward to help you with success, mm-hmm. right? But still, it just amazes me how you have been so involved with education. So at what point was it between UF and USF that you were built, your family was young and being created? What is that timeline from graduating from college to your first professional experience and creating that family?
Oh, well, what happened is that when I graduated with my master's at the University of Florida, I returned to Palm Beach County.
Gotcha.
And I was fortunate enough to land an opportunity with the Community Action Council, which was a division of government in Palm Beach County. And I worked in that capacity. I started, you know, as a job developer and doing the personnel work for the agency. And then I ascended to assistant director of the agency.
Wow.
And Head Start director. Before I left there, I was there, had a 10-year tenure there. Mm-hmm. And then during that same time, I ran for public office in Boynton Beach, and I was the first black to ever be elected to city council in Boynton Beach. And that was in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Was reelected in 1983 and 82 and served until 1985. Mm. And then from there, I decided that that wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I had planned to get married. So I moved to Tampa. Mm. And that's when I started work at the University of South Florida, just a few months after I moved here.
Uh-huh.
Mm. And the rest is history.
Yes, the rest is history.
27 and a half years history. Wow. at USF.
Wow.
While I was at USF, I decided to return to school and get my doctorate in education.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of work. Sometimes I look back at that and say, how did I survive?
How did I do that?
How did I do that? You know, doing a doctorate and traveling. I was traveling for the university because I was recruiting students.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of work. But I had a wonderful boss, Vicki Ahrens, who's now deceased. She was director of admissions. And I said that I wanted to return to school, and she did all she could to support me. So, and then the beauty about it is that when afterwards she left and went to work at the Museum Mosey,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course I stayed at USF until it's time for me to retire. And then a few years ago, I realized that. She was ill. She had taken ill.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said to her sister-in-law that she wanted me to sing Amazing Grace at her funeral services. Mm-hmm. So that was really something. And I said, if I'm around, I'd be glad to do it.
I'm there for
so,
you.
So I did that for her services. It was really, really sad. But she was a wonderful boss that really supported me. You know,
right.
a huge
influence for you.
Yeah. And she was really a sharp administrator. But what I admired was that, you know, so often people will say you could do certain things and then they throw roadblocks in your path. She never did do that. She supported me.
She paved the way.
She allowed me to arrange my travels and recruiting students around the time I had classes, as long as I was able to get my work done. So that worked out really well because I couldn't have done it without that kind of support from my supervisor.
Right. Which it sounds like up until that time, you've had incredible family. You've had incredible support that has really put you in that leadership role or given you the confidence to be that leader.
Well, I tell you,
what
happened is that even when I was on Boynton City Council, my mother was, I cherished her so dearly because she was just a wonderful mother that was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times she would come and help me out in my condo, do things for me. She allowed us, my mother wasn't a very outward person. She was more or less a family-oriented person. Mm-hmm. But she did all of the things in the background to help her children be successful at whatever we wanted to do. And so we really miss her dearly. You know, she's she died at 84. My father died at 85. But she was always there. And that she sent messages to us that I approve of what you're doing, and I'm going to be in the background to help you do whatever you need to get accomplished. Mm-hmm. And my sisters were right there, too. In fact, when I was running for public office in Boynton Beach, I had the former mayor and others to say, your sisters are an asset to you. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure when you're campaigning for office that they are there to support you. And they did just that. They were always there to support me.
That's beautiful. You have this beautiful family. Yeah. It's just, Ev, I don't know. Like we find out like the core values and the how folks are raised, and it just leads them in such an interesting direction. And always,
I had a grandma who was a devout Christian in the Baptist Church, who was a person who kind of pulled me in and got me involved in oratory and speaking and some singing, and that's, she helped kind of motivated me in that realm. Yeah. So when I was running for office, it wasn't a difficult challenge to be able to speak, because I won oratorical contests, had to speak in the front of our church.
Yeah, you were comfortable with it.
Yeah, I was extremely comfortable.
Yeah, so that was like a second nature to you. And they helped get you there.
She helped me. She helped get me there. She prepared all of that for me, my grandmother.
Yeah.
Did.
Oh, wow.
And I only had one grandparent that I knew, because the rest were deceased.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But this was my daddy's mother. She was right down the street from the church. Mm-hmm. But she got me involved in a number of things, you know, when I was a kid. In fact, we used to sing, my sisters and I, three-part harmony with her, three or four-part harmony on the porch at our house, and started singing a cappella. I didn't start singing with music.
Mm.
It was
a
cappella singing. Yeah, we would sing a cappella.
Did you always have this much bass?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's like both of y'all are like the voices of God here with the great voices.
I'm looking into the future.
Right? So you've mentioned music. You were in the band. What instrument did you play? An instrument?
B flat clarinet.
Mm. Okay.
I did that for 6 years in school. Middle and junior high school and high school, and then 1 year at the University of Florida.
Right.
And after that, I started singing much more, and I took voice from Dr. Grisby's his studio in Gainesville. And then I had a history of singing at quite a few weddings in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That was exciting, you know. I would do.
You still do gigs?
Not at this point. Every now and then I do some church music, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Special funerals, something like that.
Yeah,
but that's about
at request. What a moment for someone who was there for you to make that type of request. Going back to your teacher who gave you all the opportunity in the world to not only do your job but get your doctorate, for her to ask for you years later to sing for her.
Oh, you're talking about my boss.
Yeah. That kind of stuck with me a little bit there.
Yeah, well, see, what happened is we had a wedding at USF of a few of the colleagues of ours, and she assisted with that, helping them with their wedding, and they had asked me to sing one song at their ceremony. So she heard me sing, and then she asked her sister-in-law when I guess she felt that she wasn't going to make it, you know, from the from the lung cancer she was dealing with.
Yeah.
And her sister-in-law sent me a note on Facebook and said, Vicky said, whenever she expires, she really wants you to sing Amazing Grace at her services. And I ended this service with Amazing Grace. I said a few words about her as my supervisor.
Yeah. Well, he may have to take us out with some Amazing Grace.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. We might be asking you that in a moment. So get the water. Get the pipes ready.
So that was it. So that was, but it really was interesting moment because she always said to me, too, that I helped her understand diversity and those kind of issues, you know, with working with her at the University of South Florida.
Yeah.
And then she, that was her final request that I would sing at her services.
So you're mentioning diversity. You have had a really wonderful career. I know that, you know, you Google you and you have all these wonderful news clips and honors for folks on fighting so hard to have diversity at University of South Florida as you're going out there and getting students to come in. Mm-hmm. Over the years, how has that changed? Mm. Do you feel good about that change and why? We're always going to have work to do, for sure. And we always need to be cognizant of our neighbors and their culture. And
yeah, well, you know, it's for those of us who've been freedom fighters, we are sort of stagnant now and sort of unhappy given the climate in this country, particularly in the state of Florida. And we've lost grounds, you know, really with what's happening politically. Mm. You know, when you look at the enrollment of students of color at the University of South Florida and at the University of Florida, the enrollment has diminished because of what's happening in the climate. You know, when you look at the hiring of black faculty at the University of South Florida, we're losing faculty members because many of them choose not to stay in the state of Florida, given the political climate that we're confronted and faced with. So that's a real sad part about it, you know. But still, we can't lose hope. We have to just continue to fight and to continue to make things better, you know. And what we say to people all the time: you got to be politically involved. You got to vote. You just can't sit on the sidelines and say, "Oh, I didn't do this. I didn't do that." You got to get in the fight. Well, and at least exercise your right to vote to make some things happen. Otherwise, things will not change.
And be aware, because I think that's part of, you know, I think that's part of it, too. You were saying that, you know, with your supervisor, you helped her understand a lot about diversity. And I think that maybe it's a conversation that doesn't happen often enough, A, because it's uncomfortable, you know, and B, because it seems like something that's in our past. You know, it seems like, oh, civil rights is over. Everything's good now. But, you know, to be involved, you have to understand the climate, like you're talking about. You know, what is the reality for people of color, for culture, for things like that?
Yeah. So we've lost some ground, but we just gotta stay focused.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people need to stay curious and understand. So help just a little snippet. How can we help things get better again?
Mm-hmm. Well,
or even beyond that, frankly.
Well, I think it's gonna be. A lot of the decisions are legislative. You know, you got to get the right kind of people in office that will make things much better. You know, and I think that's where it starts. And, you know, some people are still apathetic, and they got to do away with that. You got to be involved in what's going on around you. You really do. Mm-hmm. You got to register to vote. You got to exercise that right to vote. Because otherwise, things would not be where they are now if we didn't do that some years ago. You know, Fannie Lou Hamer particularly was one who was a very advocate for voting rights, and she preached that all over the place. Hear ye, you know, that's because she wanted people to be involved politically and to vote. And so often, you know, people have gotten a little bit comfortable, and so we've lost ground. We really have. And so, and a lot of that, you know, started in Florida in terms of what's happening politically. That's where a lot of us has started, right here in this state. And so it's a lot that we need to try to improve on.
Yeah, we're really fortunate. We now have an advocacy department, if you will. You saw Lorena Hardwick as you came in. She leads that charge in helping folks understand how to best address our neighbors, how to best help our neighbors, respect, culture, all of the things with our elected officials. And I will say I've learned a lot from her in a year and a half. Yeah. And the thing is do your homework and be open-minded, and your vote matters. Mm-hmm. Your opinion matters when you're voting.
Well,
and
you know.
Know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Well, you know, the thing about what we have to understand is that, you know, Martin King said it beautifully. He said, we'll either work together or we'll perish as fools. Mm-hmm. And he was correct in that, because when you, even in my hometown when I was in public office in Boynton Beach, my father said to me, he said, wouldn't it be nice if we had our main street named after Martin Luther King? I said, that would be a real good thing to do. That was his agenda. He pushed my way for me to get that done. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how I was going to get it done. But anyway, I decided to take it to city council. And, of course, I had some resistance because some of my council people told me that it was separatism and we were not, you know, supporting togetherness and whatever. Mm. And I said to them that night on council, I said, some of us are a generation or two removed from having white ancestry. Mm-hmm. So we're in this together.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I told them that was my family's history. Mm-hmm. My mother always told me that her grandfather or great-grandfather was a white Englishman. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we are in this together. Because if you looked at my mother, you know that she was not just an old African American. She had some white genes.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
And so that's what I said to them on city council. We are in this together. Yeah. So we need to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to get that done.
That's amazing.
I used a little strategy, though, just to name the new part of the street, the revised, renovated part of the street, to name that after Martin King. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to Boynton a few years later, and nothing had changed, not the rest of the street.
Oh.
And I challenged them at a gathering about naming the rest of the street.
Right.
So they did name the rest of the street from the intracoastal all the way to the interstate.
Very cool.
That's amazing.
I told them, I say, we need to get something done around here.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a heritage park that they had in the community that they were just creating, and they wanted me to be one of the speakers. And then I think the next year or two, they put my name as one of the youngest people in the heritage park who had made a difference in the community.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But then when I did that plea that day when I spoke, then one of the women in the community continued to work with the city council, and they finally got the whole street named after Martin Luther King.
That's amazing. And there it is.
Yeah.
And what a legacy for you to know that you were part of that.
Like, oh,
what a
absolutely,
wonderful story
yeah.
to tell. So you mentioned, you know, this wonderful street that you had a part of that, bringing kind of that nod and that history to Boynton Beach. MLK is very important to you, and MLK Day, and you've been very involved with that in Tampa Bay. Tell us a little bit about that, because we're kind of stepping into that realm with you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when the festival was founded, it was mainly to enhance the cultural aspects of the Tampa Bay community as it relates to the African-American community. And then later we sort of associated it more with the MLK holiday. Since it was around January. But even at the University of South Florida, we had we have an MLK King Plaza that they asked me to serve on when I worked at the university. And it was kind of interesting because they wanted to do some like a spirit mound at one time. Mm-hmm. And I said, a spirit mound? I said freedom is The way you're designing this looks like freedom would be a dead end street.
Mm.
We don't want nothing like that in the name of Martin Luther King on that plaza
at
the University of South Florida. So then that's when they Steve Giff came in as an architect and came in with some other ideas about they had a trail like for all of the major cities that Martin made a difference in.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And then that's when they did the bust of a Martin King and the reflection pond that sort of reminds you of the March on Washington, you know, the that was an experience we had at USF, and so people still today look forward to going to that M.L. King Plaza for things on campus. Mm-hmm. So I was involved in that, and then of course the interfaith service that we have with Dr. Roy Kaplan has been involved with that with the Urban League for years, and then I decided to assist him with that. So we do an interfaith service every year with the Jewish community and the Baptist community, but you know, with white churches and African American churches. We try to bring everybody together. So we're looking to do that on the day of the holiday at Allen Temple AME Church at 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Got a choir this year that's 70 members strong. They're going to have an interfaith choir, and my pastor from Beulah Baptist Church, who is our lead servant, Alan Harris, is going to be our speaker. So we're looking forward to that. And then, of course, you know, I'm involved in the M.L. King Parade Foundation. Mm-hmm. I serve as an advisor for them. And we're having the gala on January 9th at Amateur Works. And, you know, that's when we name community heroes.
Yes.
For that event. And, of course, you know, your organization was a community hero the other year.
Yes, I was able to attend. Yeah, it was wonderful.
You attended on behalf of Feeding Tampa Bay. So yes. It was real nice. So we're going to do it again this year on the 9th of January at Amateur Works. And they are highlighting organizations that are involved in feeding the poor and taking care of either feeding the poor or doing some things for the poor, as Martin King would espouse. And so that's what we're doing for this year. So I forget the four groups that are going to be acknowledged, but that's going to be the focus of this year's event. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys pick like really, I don't even remember who. It was four of us. Mm-hmm. And I knew, and I can't even remember right now. We'll have to put it in the notes. But we were there with three other organizations, and you guys really honor and respect the organizations in such a beautiful way. Deanna King was the hostess the mostest for the evening. Is she coming back this year?
I'm not sure.
She's so good.
I don't know if they're going to have her this year or not.
Huh.
Is that the same year you were honored? When they honored the young lady who was with the Dress for Success?
Yes. Mm. Yes, we were there with Dress for Success. Yeah, yes, we were.
She's deceased now, but I think she was one of the honorees.
Yes.
So we're doing that. And then, of course, you know, Toba is doing the Martin Luther King Leadership Breakfast.
Yes.
That's always the morning of the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget who they have as their speaker, but that's another activity that would be going on. So it's quite a bit going on.
Yeah.
And, of course, they do the parade here in Tampa, and then they'll do the parade in St. Pete. And I think Bethune-Cookman College is coming back this year. I don't know if FAMU is going to participate in the parade this year, but I know Bethune-Cookman College will here in Tampa. So it's quite a bit going on there.
How's their football season been, Bethune?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if they've done that well, because I think the Rattlers beat them, you know, for the game that they usually have every year.
Oh, yeah, the rival game.
It
wasn't
game.
Their year. You got to stay a fan, though.
Yeah.
You know, we're Florida State fans, and it's not too pretty right now, but you still got to love them.
Oh, yeah.
So we're really – we invited you to come in because Feeding Tampa Bay, of course, we're changing our outlook as an organization. We all used to get MLK Day off.
Mm-hmm.
We
get a different day off now, but we are trying to use MLK Day as
active day. So right, the MLK Day of Service, and we're all on board with it, and we're really excited. We're going to try to get 400-500 people in this building at one time to help serve their neighbors.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure we invite you to go look at our website and sign up for that date, which is the 20th of January. And you can come out here and join all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it would be really lovely to have you come join us and tell us about you. You've been a leader And I say Florida because you were in Boynton Beach. You've been in Gainesville as a leader. We were very fortunate to have you come to Tampa.
Yeah, you know, and I served on the African-American History Task Force for a number of years.
Yeah.
Out of Tallahassee, yes. Out of the Commission.
So I was right when I said state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, then, I knew. I did my homework.
And then I was a gubernatorial appointment, still involved with the Florida Fund for Minority Teachers. That's a program that the legislature started to be able to get more students of color in education, you know, Latin, African-American students in the classrooms in the state of Florida. So I still serve on that board.
So you're very busy.
Yeah, that keeps
Well, you got to keep busy.
Oh, yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. You got to stay involved, that's for sure.
Well, we
and then, of course, you know, I used to do the MLK Day of Service for Hillsborough Community College.
Mm-hmm.
But those funds, the governor removed those funds from the state budget a few years ago. So that program terminated. You know, it sunsetted. But we had a wonderful time because we used to use Feeding Tampa Bay for some of those programs as well. You know, when we had the MLK Day of Service. And that was one exciting program that I just really loved working in that I did that for about 7 years.
Yeah, that's a shame.
In fact, my highlight of that one was visiting the I think the Salvation Army where I had high school kids making all of the food for the homeless downtown.
Meal bags?
Oh, yeah. No, they were preparing a hot meal for them.
Oh, okay.
And I left and went downstairs to call Dr. Holmes at that time. She's Dr. Joan Holmes Mosley now. But I called her to let her know how exciting that program was. And all I could do was just cry. I was
so
excited and full of to see these young people really taking care of food, fixing food for the homeless. Oh, that was just, I tell you, that was one moment. All I could do was cry as a baby. Oh, that touched my heart that day. It really did.
Well, maybe if you have time, you need to come out to our day of service. Help us rally next year. We'll get people going.
So you got a lot going. Yeah, that's we used to have such wonderful activities. In fact, we have one activity that was Grace is what they call that facility. It's like a clinic.
Grace Point?
It's called, her name is Grace.
Oh, okay.
Glenn. She worked at the community college, but she worked very closely with the BEST program, Dr. Okay. Frederick, and they did some things with high school kids, but she was able to work with the church on projects in that community, and the church even assisted her later on in doing a clinic in the community for people who don't have insurance.
Oh, wow, okay.
That came out of the MLK Day of Service. That was really, really nice. It's still going on now.
That's amazing.
It's called a little clinic right there on, I think it's on 30th.
So that effort is still helping people in some way.
Still helping people in some way.
Right?
That's right.
Plus, you got to think about all those students that you encouraged. And then, you know, we know when we volunteer, you're doing something great, but it makes you feel great.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? It's kind of a double gift, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
So you were teaching kids through that whole time, and they probably became adults that are out there helping too.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to thank you for joining us, for taking the time.
My pleasure.
I always love listening to you talk. You going to sing a little Amazing Grace for us? I'm not kidding.
I'll do a little piece for you that's not Amazing Grace.
Okay.
That's sort of symbolic of the movement. Freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. But before I be a slave, I'll be resting in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Wow. I have chills. What Excellent. An amazing voice you have. Thank you so much. We are so fortunate to have you as a leader in our community.
Oh, well, thank you, Shannon.
And I'll go back and I'm thanking your mom and your grandmother in heaven for influencing you so well.
Oh, yeah. They pushed me. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Shannon.
All right.
And I wish the best for Feeding Tampa Bay. This is one awesome program you all have here. It really is.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Feeding Tampa Bay and how to join the movement at feedingtampabay.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok at Feeding Tampa Bay.